I mentioned that we're on the third day of the octave of Easter and the fifth day of the novena to the Divine Mercy. Perhaps I should clarify one thing, though, because a novena is really 9 days. That's the definition of a novena, but the octave is considered one day. So even though I say it's the third day of the octave, and yes, that's true, it's liturgically considered one day. One day of the resurrection, one day of joyous celebration. This is the day the Lord has made, so this is the day. I remember some memory from my childhood, the state fair used to take place in my city at the end of summer. It's kind of the culmination of lots of events throughout the state, and then everyone gathers for the statewide state fair. And I think in the old days, that fair lasted for a week. But as they built it up with more exhibits and more activities and whatnot, it got longer and longer. So they started this slogan, a week so full, it lasts 10 days. That's part of how they advertised the fair. So this is something like the Easter octave. Easter is a day so full, it lasts 8 days. It's a big, big day. In fact, it's the day of our faith. At the center of Easter is, of course, Jesus' resurrection, Jesus bursting forth from the tomb, bursting open what sealed the whole human race in a condition of death. Whether the stone was rolled aside by angels or by the Lord or by itself or by the earthquake, or we're not exactly sure, but the tomb was broken open, and Jesus rose alive and glorious out of the tomb. That's Easter. But we can't get very far in the story of Easter without encountering Mary Magdalene, who's at the center of today's gospel. Mary Magdalene and the women were the first to meet the risen Lord. And Mary Magdalene is the first to be given the responsibility of proclaiming the good news of the resurrection. That's why she's known as the apostle to the apostles, because she was sent to those who are sent. Like it's right here in the gospel, Jesus told her, go and tell my brothers. Go, announce to them. So I'd like to spend a little time reflecting on Mary Magdalene, even though today's first reading, a continuation of Peter's address at Pentecost, is also a very great reading, and there's a lot we can learn from him. I'm going to focus just for today on Mary Magdalene. Remember Mary, by the way, that she's this woman here in the red garment that's the traditional color of Mary Magdalene, the kind of a indication of her colorful past. Although that's disputed. What we do know about Mary is that she was possessed of 7 demons. We don't know that she was a bad woman. But anyway, that's Mary Magdalene. And the reason why I point to her there at the foot of the cross is because if we want to understand her experience on Easter morning, we have to understand her experience on Good Friday afternoon. She was an eyewitness of the crucifixion, a very close eyewitness. She was right there. She saw the excruciating torture of Jesus and the blood, the piercing of his side. She saw the whole thing, which would be traumatic for anybody who was there, but more traumatic for someone who loves. So when we learn about the death of someone, we might be moved. We hear about the death of people in Leyte. It's disturbing. But if we know someone personally, and if we love someone, it wounds us more deeply to hear or to witness a death. So anyone who's experienced the death of a loved one knows this. And if you've experienced a tragic death of a loved one, you know it. It's traumatic. So this is Mary Magdalene. one who really, the real, the perfect lover at the foot of the cross is the Blessed Virgin Mary. So she's Mary's presence there. She's also right here, right in front of Mary Magdalene. Her presence is what makes it possible for us to process this trauma and come out on the other side with joyful faith in the resurrection. Otherwise, we can be stuck in the tomb of trauma. Now, one of the people have different reactions to sadness and grief. The most typical modern way to deal with sadness is to run away from it and try to escape it. It's a modern phenomenon. People just don't face reality, escape. But another possible way of dealing with sadness, not a healthy way, but common enough, is to sink into it. So we might run away from it, or we might sink into it like quicksand, stuck in sadness, which leads to the temptation to self-pity. This gospel account of Mary at the tomb shows that she didn't fall into that trap. When she gets to the tomb, remember, she went to the tomb early in the morning, and she found it, the stone rolled away, and she ran to tell the apostles. So this is her second time at the tomb. She ran to tell the apostles. Peter and John go running. That's the front cover of this way. You see John reaches the tomb first, and he looks in. You can see the brightness of the empty tomb. And here's Peter trying to catch up with him, and Mary's not on here, but Mary was definitely running right behind them because she's at the tomb. That's where we pick up the story here. She's at the Peter and John left. They didn't stay around because Jesus wasn't there, so they just went home. But Mary stayed, evidence of her great love. And she sees the angels. That doesn't impress her. They ask, "Woman, why are you weeping?" Now, if she were in self-pity, this is why I brought this up. She would have said, "I'm so sad, I lost my Lord, my teacher." In other words, the focus would be on her loss rather than on the one who was lost. And she doesn't fall into that. They ask, "Why are you weeping?" And she says, "They have taken my Lord." So her focus is on the Lord, not on herself. It might seem like an insignificant thing, but it's really an important distinction when we're grieving to know where to direct our grief. Yes, we experience loss and we have a right to be sad by it, but don't sink into feeling sorry for yourself, because that's a trap. Okay, anyway, Mary Magdalene has a pure grief, a pure sadness. Unfortunately, a lot of people have turned Mary's relationship to Jesus into some kind of a romantic attachment. That's an impoverishment of what love is. Romantic attachment is a kind of love too, but is that the only kind of love there is? If a woman loves a man, does that mean she's in love with him and wants to marry him? That's silliness. And people who come up with that conclusion don't know anything about love. Or they haven't loved anybody, except their girlfriend or something like that. Is that the only love there is? No. What about love for a good friend? What about love for parents, love for children, love for people who have been good to us? What about love for those who are suffering? Love is much richer than romance. So don't fall into that mistake of thinking that Mary Magdalene is just a bereaved girlfriend. That's silly. Okay, anyway, so she has this pure grief, which is a grief for the loss of a loved one. And she sees Jesus, but she doesn't recognize him. Now, for some reason, as I was reflecting on this, I remembered the veil, the purple veil we had over the images last week. If you were here last week, that's a Holy Week tradition to cover all sacred images with purple cloth. And I've always interpreted that to mean that we don't look at the images because we're we're passing through a grief of our own, and we're also being invited to look inside. I never thought about the experience of the people on the other side of that cloth. There's Mary Magdalene. She's wrapped up in a purple cloth. So maybe this is not the best way to ponder, but I'll take it this way, and maybe you can go further with it than I have. But to be, it's one thing for us to see images draped by a purple cloth. It's another thing to be under a cloth or under a veil ourselves. And grief has that effect on us. It veils us. It limits our perception of what is beyond us. So you can imagine this statue of Mary Magdalene under the purple veil. And of course, it's just a statue. But think of her experience of the cross is she's covered over with a veil of sorrow. And this veil is still on her as she weeps at the tomb. And it seems that that's why she doesn't immediately recognize the Lord. Her perception is still veiled with sorrow. When Jesus says, Mary, she thinks he's the gardener. He's not the gardener, he's the Lord. But when he addresses her by name, the whole impact, the whole power of the relationship is reawakened. It's a living. It's not a loss. It's a finding. And of course, she comes alive and says, "Whoa, Rabboni!" She doesn't know how to react. Oh, the teacher! She falls at his feet. What would you do? You fall at his feet. Then we get this extraordinary statement of Jesus: "Stop holding on to me. Stop holding on to me." And this is really something to ponder. Why should we not hold on to the Lord? I mean, he's the center of our life. He's the most important person in the world. It seems that we should hold on to him. That's what we would naturally do. Now, I know since we're in the Philippines, we have to mention the Noli of Jose Rizal. The problem of this Noli me tangere, that's the Latin version of this statement, "Stop holding on to me," or it's usually translated, touch me not, Noli me tangere. Well, in that novel of Rizal, that expression is used to show that the clergy are so far above the common people, the Spanish friars are so far above the common people that they can't be accused of any wrongdoing. It's a kind of elitism. I think that's what's conveyed in the novel. It's been years since I read it. Probably years since you read it too, but you know the basic idea. The bad guys in the novel are the friars, the frailes, and they're untouchable. That is not at all the meaning of touch me not in the gospel. In fact, it's quite the opposite. It's not elitism, I'm so far above you and you shouldn't touch me. It's I'm ascending and I want to take you up higher. It's exactly the opposite of elitism. Exactly the opposite of what's conveyed in the Noli. So Jesus is saying, don't stop holding on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father, but I'm going to my Father and your Father, my God and your God. I'm not leaving you behind. I'm bringing you up into this new relationship with the Father. You also are a child of the Father. You are not just my disciple. You are my sister. Go tell my brothers, who are also children of the Father now, tell them to come and what does she say? Go and tell them. Yeah, I'm going to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God. So this establishment of a relationship with the Father is what happens through the resurrection. So don't hold on to the earthly understanding of who Jesus is. Rise up with me. Ascend with me. So that's what Mary runs and announces to the Lord, announces to the disciples. Notice how her proclamation, she doesn't run and say, Jesus is risen, hallelujah. She runs and says, I have seen the Lord. So it's not just news about what happened, it's personal testimony. I have seen the Lord. Whether you believe it or not, this is what I have experienced, and that's how the gospel spread, by personal testimony. Personal testimony, not just here's the creed, read the creed, or here's the announcement, but I know this is true. It's my own experience. So that's the first evangelist of the resurrection, Mary Magdalene. Okay, well, we have more to reflect on as we go through the octave, but we'll have to stop here. At least we have this beautiful example of Mary Magdalene, passing through the stages of loss, of trauma, of grief, of pure sorrow, searching, discovering, and being raised up to a higher level by the gift of faith in the resurrection, and then being given a mission to announce it to the world. It's a summary, really, of our journey. And we ask St. Mary Magdalene to intercede for us all.